If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
If we give players a lot of power to do anything, then they can make ugly things. And that was a little scary, especially for, like, you know, artists and art directors. Like, oh, we want the game to look beautiful, and we don't. But giving players a lot of power, even if that means letting them make ugly things, also allows them to make truly beautiful things and truly unique things. And so we sort of let go of those apprehensions, allowed players to float things off the ground. I mean, there's the story of, we did not intend for players to be able to float their houses, and players found sort of a workaround to be able to do that. And then we had an internal discussion of how are we going to solve this. We had two different ways we could have gone. One was to shut it down and say, like, no, floating house is not allowed, smash them down to the ground, or embrace it.
Hello and welcome to Lightmap from Sifter, our video game industry interview show. I'm Seamus Byrne. World of Warcraft Midnight is the 11th expansion for World of Warcraft and the second in a trilogy storyline concept, and it goes live this month. As part of the build-up, Associate Game Director Paul Cubitt visited Australia, and we took the chance to sit down with him to get his insights on what fans new and old should expect.
Hi, I'm Kat John.
And I'm Fiona Bartholomew.
And here are the top stories this week on Walkthrough, Sifter's weekly news podcast for Sunday, the 22nd of March.
Nope, it's the children who are wrong. NVIDIA's DLSS 5, which adds AI slop to your favourite game, is universally panned.
A new Sims 4 update goes ahead and breaks all mods. Classic one.
The Steam Deck and the Switch 2 get some awesome new software features. Hooray for handheld gamers.
Plus, we run through the most exciting new releases out this week.
You can get every episode of Walkthrough for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or on our website, sifter.com.au, every Sunday.
Join the Sifter community on Discord at sifter.com.au/discord.
Paul Cubitt, Associate Game Director, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, nice to meet you, Seamus. Happy to be here.
Midnight, being the middle of this World Soul saga, you know, how does that feel as the team behind the scenes to create this? I don't know, it kind of feels like it's going to be our Empire moment, but having that kind of big lore moment in an extended story, it's quite different to the old way of doing things. So how does that feel to be at this midpoint?
Yeah, with a name like Midnight, it really does suggest that dark second chapter of the trilogy, doesn't it? Something like an Empire. It's super fun. This is not something that we've done a lot in the past, is build a trilogy of expansions. There's been continuity of story a bit from one to another, but this is really the first expansion we've built, which is intentionally, we set out this is the second chapter of a trilogy. And so in a lot of ways, it's exciting because we know that we are continuing an existing story. In a lot of ways, it also challenges us, and we want to make sure that this feels like a good place for players to jump in, even if you didn't happen to play through The War Within. And so we've done a lot of work to make sure that you can get easily caught up if you didn't happen to play through The War Within, or if you just need a refresher, that those options are available for you to kind of catch up on the story and jump right into the action in Midnight.
And now coming back to a core continental zone. Mm-hmm. What's that like in terms of story as well? To me, it feels like we kind of get the nice nostalgia vibe, but also that the stakes are high because we're sort of back in the old world. You know, like from your side of things, what was it about coming back to a core zone that felt exciting?
It is absolutely that. It is that we are able to come back to a place that has been experienced before, which we don't really do a lot of return stories to previous zones. And with Eversong Woods, a zone which we haven't been to in such a long time, but it has been such a core part of our history. It's where the Sunwell is. Yeah. This is a really cool opportunity for us to continue stories in those spaces. And it's also a good opportunity to see how players respond to updating zones in this way, where the old version of Eversong Woods is still present if you want to be able to play through it, but now you can play through this new version as well. Really excited to see how players respond to that, the updates to Zul'aman, and of course, the rest.
Also, we got a lot of experience updates in this expansion. So, you know, user experience, add-on changes, the stat squish, a triple raid. Like, there's so many things that you've played with at the start of this expansion as well. You know, why did it feel like the right time to actually throw a lot at us as players and, you know, decide, hey, here's a very fresh version of the sandbox to play?
I mean, the answer is different for basically all those different features. For a stat squish, this is more just a pure numerical thing of like when the numbers feel like they're too high, then we make them feel like a little bit more appropriate. And so we were at that point. For the three raids and for a lot of other choices we made, these are a function of the story we're telling. A lot of times we look at what the story is and what it wants to be and then see like, oh, this story actually wants to be a six boss raid and then some quests in the middle that happen after that boss is defeated and then another two boss raid afterwards. And when we looked at how we could build our raid structure, we thought, well, we haven't done that before. Let's try that out. And then other things like changes that have come to add-ons is just a function of listening to player feedback and seeing how it's been more and more required for players to feel like they need to get, you know, go to third-party locations to get add-ons in order to play at a functional level. And we wanted to make sure that that did not feel required. We do love that players have the ability to modify their game with add-ons, so we do want to continue to support that. But we can make these changes that are going into Midnight to make it feel like it's not required and that the game is able to do those things that that add-ons used to be required for in order to perform at high levels and things like raids, Mythic Plus, and so on.
I've been following a lot of the news, but I really haven't played around on the beta, so I'm still not sure what the prey system is going to feel like. So, you know, what's the pitch to someone like me who plays a lot, but I haven't actually messed around with it yet? Like, why should I turn on prey?
Yeah, so this is probably the thing I've played the most in beta, and I've been having a lot of fun with it as well. Basically, this is a hunt. You are hunting a particular enemy that you are assigned. You want to hunt this dangerous foe, usually a bad guy that you're going to hunt down, but they're hunting you as well. The way that plays out is you know what zone they're in, but you don't know where they are, and you just do stuff. You might have a couple clues on the map that say like they're likely to be around here, and so you can complete world quests, you can hunt for treasures, you can kill rares, and then always be on the lookout for them. You might find them hiding behind a bush or a tree. More likely they might find you and attack you, and then eventually after you've had a couple scuffles like that, you will have identified their hiding place, you go take them out. As there's also multiple difficulty levels, and the way I like to play this is on Nightmare difficulty level, where you have all these additional torments, which really change the way that the zone plays. You're going to have, as you're fighting enemies, pools of deadly goo will appear beneath you, and you have to move out of them. There might be some shadowy apparitions of yourself that start chasing you, and you either have to run away, or you can use one of your interrupt abilities to like interrupt them and make them disappear. And then probably my favorite one is Astalor, who is your quest giver throughout this experience, will yell, "Kill something now!" And you have like 15 seconds to kill anything. It really changes the way you play the zone because you start to learn, this is where I can find like low-level creatures or like critters or at least creatures that I know I can kill in 15 seconds reliably. Yeah. There's a couple corners of Voidstorm and other places where, you know, like, this is a dangerous place for me to be when I'm on prey, because if I get that torment applied to me, then I'm toast.
With the critters, if you pop that old toy that just like kills critters within a radius, would that actually count?
Yeah. It literally just makes something die.
And
if you achieve that, then you don't get that dot on you.
Now, obviously, housing, huge deal. And people are hearing a lot about it, I guess. But I'd love a sense of what is it like when you're trying to set up a team where you know this is one of the new core pillars of the game, that it's not just an expansion feature. You know, what does that look like to actually tell that team, hey, you know, you're going to do housing and this is actually a really cool new long-term aspect of the game rather than just sort of something that's rolling types of things like an expansion
team? Yeah, it was a really fun and interesting experience. You know, housing has been something we've been working on for some time now. We gave ourselves a lot of runway to get it right because we knew when we did it, after 20 years of World of Warcraft, we wanted to do it right. So we gave ourselves a lot of time. Step one is building a team. Step two was defining what our kind of core pillars were. And those were to build something which is boundless self-expression, to allow players to express themselves in all different ways, and then was innately social. Make sure that it is not like something that you're always doing by yourself, but you're interacting with others. And then sort of set the team free to with a lot of creative artists, a lot of talented engineers and designers to build what they thought fit those pillars. And this is where we ended up with this really cool mode where you'd be able to live with your guild. That's the social part of it. You're able to do so many cool things with decor, with both a basic approachable mode, but an advanced mode, which allows you to do really interesting things. We've seen so much creativity come out from players from having, you know, played with these modes that, and this all came from giving ourselves lots of time and a lot of really talented creative individuals to make it so.
I think the way that they've been allowed to really play and also respond through the beta phase and the early access phase, I think, is really commendable. You know, what was that sense like for them? Was, you know, were they double checking with, you know, you guys in the leadership going, is it okay if we let them do this thing that technically is breaking what we thought it was going to be? You know, what was that like?
Yeah. I mean, for sure, there was a lot of conversation and seeing, like, what will players do if we give them this power?
Yeah.
A lot of that was sort of us rationalizing that, like, this is a good thing, that if we give players a lot of power to do anything, then they can make ugly things. And that was a little scary, especially for, like, you know, artists and art directors, like, oh, we want the game to look beautiful, and we don't. But giving players a lot of power, even if that means letting them make ugly things, also allows them to make truly beautiful things and truly unique things. And so we sort of let go of those apprehensions, allowed players to float things off the ground. I mean, there's the story of, we did not intend for players to be able to float their houses, and players found sort of a workaround to be able to do that. And then we had an internal discussion of, how are we going to solve this? We had two different ways we could have gone. One was to shut it down and say, like, no, floating house is not allowed, smash them down to the ground, or embrace it. And the second is what we did. So we actually made it easier for you to float your house up, as opposed to having to use workarounds to make it happen.
And what I love as well is seeing, actually, when you see videos of people playing with their houses this way, that they're going in and, like, putting a floor in on their floor. You know, they don't want it to look ugly. They want it to look cool. And therefore, they'll do the work to cover the hole that they go, oh, this shouldn't be here, I'll fix it.
Right, yeah, exactly. So, and that is a testament to, you know, sort of the creativity of our fan base.
Yeah, that's awesome. You were in charge of professions back in the day. And as another pillar of the game, you know, it seems like one of the hardest things to actually get the balance right on, like, because there's power involved, there's economies involved, but of course professions are then feeding into this new housing system as well. So how is it that you, I guess, get that overall balance right with another one of those pillars feeding into this new one?
Right. Professions have always been a really interesting space in that, like, yeah, we do want them to be able to offer you power, but also we don't want you to feel forced based on game mechanics. It's like, well, because I'm a hunter, I have to be a scribe because this gives me the stat that I want. Your profession is one of those places where you really can define what your character is about. And if you want to be a leather worker, or if you want to be a scribe, then you should be able to do that and not feel like you're shortchanging your character. And so really, when it comes to professions design, a lot of it is leaning into fantasy, leaning into what is the cool things that we can make. And crafting decor is one of the best ways we can do that, because decor does not give you power. It just gives you cool things you can hang on your wall or put on your floors and so on. And so we're really excited to see what jewel crafters make, what scribes make, what blacksmiths make, and so on, as it applies to decor.
Awesome. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
You're listening to Lightmap, interesting conversations with video game creators.
This has been Lightmap, Sifter's interview podcast. My name is Seamus Byrne. Thank you so much for joining me. Please support the show by giving us a rating and review on your favorite podcast player, or head to our socials to show your support and share our work with all your friends. Sifter is produced by myself, Naomi Jackson, Fiona Bartholomeus, Kat Jarnt, Carl Paletto, Chris Button, and Adam Christo. Mitch Lowe is senior producer, and Gianni DiGiovanni is Sifter's executive producer and script editor. Thanks to Mina Shamali, who composed the Lightmap theme, and thanks to Audio Technica Australia and Apple for their support of Sifter. We will catch you on the next episode of Lightmap.